and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shay Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
Welcome, and you are listening to New Retirement Radio. My name is Shay Pataja, and I have my friend Paul Michalak with me here today. And Paul he's a smart one. I'd say sharp, quick-witted, and spent his career working for General Motors. And what's the most interesting part of your story to me, Paul, is that you started the day after you graduated high school. So we're going to talk about that today. This is my series, Real Retirement Stories. For those who have an interesting story, have wisdom to share with you, our listeners, and can give us more of the what's it actually like versus what we think it will be like. Because I myself fantasize about retirement and being in Northern Michigan 4 months of the year, and then somewhere warm the rest of the time. We were just talking that snow has already fallen, and here we are going into the winter months. And Paul, tell us more. So you start at GM the day after high school. What possessed you to just jump right in?
Well, two things. Number one, I had to actually wait to start at GM to the following Monday after graduation, because you had to be 18 to work for GM at the time, and my birthday was early June, so I had to wait till after my birthday to start. And the reason I started is that I was part of a cooperative education program through, at that time was called General Motors Institute, now is called Kettering University. And if anybody wants to go through college on the co-op program and come out with no debt, I highly recommend investigating it. However, understand that in my class anyway, more than 90% of the incoming class was in the top 10% of their high school graduation class. In addition to that, when we sat down for our first orientation, the orientator said, look to your right, look to your left, because those folks will not be here at graduation. So there is less than half my class that graduated that I started with.
Wow. And what was the end result? What degree were you getting? Or
at that time, only engineering degrees were conferred.
Okay.
Classes actually ran 6 days a week. We had classes on Saturday morning. And some of us liked Saturday morning classes because it was less, a couple hours less during the week, and we didn't go on Saturday.
Oh, okay.
So we have to catch up.
Got it. And do you come from a family of engineers?
Not at all. Not at all. In fact, my father never even graduated high school. If he did, it was through a GED. At that time, coming out of, like a lot of people in his generation, his folks were actually gone before, while he was in high school.
Wow.
So there were eight kids in the family, and kids had to go to work.
Yep.
To support the family. So anyway, it's interesting to be able to pursue
something totally different. All right, so you jump right in, you go through the program, and then what did you spend your career with GM doing?
Well, from a wide range. Initially started in operations, which is the manufacturing side of the business, and then progressed from there, transferred to the assembly side, entirely different. And they would always say that assembly side is what pays the bills. That's where they build and make the cars and sell the cars to the dealers. And having been in that, I said, yeah, that might be what We sell the cars, but the money's made in the manufacturing side. That's what I used to say. I haven't been on both sides of that. From there, I went to the tech center. And from the tech center, was able to be involved in a wide range of product programs, different vehicle lines for many years. The last 14 years spent totally on Corvette programs. And within GM, you could work your whole career and never get a taste of working on the program like the Corvette. And I was fortunate enough to be assigned to it for 14 years and across what's called three generations of Corvettes. And we always refer to Corvettes within their generations. Like, for example, current generation, the new one that just came out is the C8. And I actually started working on the tail end of the C4 program.
So would you say that those 14 years were the highlight of your career?
Of course.
Yes.
Of course.
Did you get to drive a few Corvettes?
I may have retired earlier than I did if I had not been able to work on those programs. Time flies by when you work on a program like that, and there's a lot of pressure on a program like that. It's the highlight of the vehicle lines within General Motors, so the pressure is always on to do well in them, and it is highly prolific vehicle.
How many people are in a group, so like, or a team that they, like, how many people work to create the new generation of Corvette?
Oh, totally. It would be difficult to say. I'd think about that for a second. I mean, there are engineering teams, which, of course, I was a part of for a long period of time, but there are engineering teams from each of the different product areas of the vehicle, from the powertrain, from the body, from the exterior, from the electronics. So from the manufacturing side, manufacturing engineering side, from the safety side, just a multitude of teams that come together. And that's probably one of the amazing things to me always, even though I was part of it for so long, is that you have an estimated 12,000 to 15,000 parts that come together to make a vehicle. And it never ceased to amaze me at the end of the assembly line with all those parts that came together. You turned the key on and pushed the button, and it started and it ran and right off the line. So
that's amazing.
It always was amazing to me that that would happen.
What's the beginning, the time frame from starting to work on the vehicle till it coming off the line?
Well, on average, from concept, even pre-prototype, is probably approximately 4 years.
Wow. Do you have a favorite Corvette? Are you allowed to say? If other Corvettes are listening, close your ears.
Mine was always the 1963 Stingray split-window Corvette.
That's a really beautiful car.
It is, and still is, and still iconic.
Do you ever stop over at Hagerty and look at the cars they
haven't had an opportunity yet. In the business that I was in, we happened to, the business following retirement, happened to be part of a wedding that was Hagerty related, and they brought a lot of their vehicles out onto the peninsula for that wedding and had a chance to see them then. And yeah, that was different.
You and I have something in common. We both love cars, so I'm the outlier with my friends. They think that I waste my money and time, and they do not understand the thrill I have. And I've said since high school, the minute you shut the door on this $700 Subaru, it was my first car I bought. It was a hatchback Subaru with a stick. had to put oil in it every single week. And at one point, the hood flew up flat onto my windshield when we were driving. So, but I loved that car, and it was still my little sanctuary because I could shut the door, drive away from everyone. And, you know, as a teenager, I didn't know how cool it was that I grew up on M22 in Leelanau County. I mean, I couldn't wait to leave the place by the time I was a senior, of course. But, yeah, that freedom you get driving, there's just nothing like it.
And I would suggest that most people in your generation probably never learned to drive with a stick. So you could probably leave your vehicle someplace with the keys in it and never be afraid of having it stolen because they wouldn't be able to get 2 feet out of the parking
You're
spot.
You're actually right. My dad took me on the back roads of Leelanau County and taught me how to drive with his truck That's the only time I've seen my dad nervous or get close to losing his patience. So when I got my car, I think it's amazing it ran after 2 years of me driving it. But yeah, cars, there's just something to them. So I'm glad we have that bond.
And my kids, probably tell them a little bit of the story out of school, although at this time frame, it was not disallowed by the corporation that your family members drive the vehicles that were assigned to you. But my three daughters all learned to drive sticks with Corvette sticks.
That's not fair. That's so cool. So you're working this intense career. You have a family. You have three daughters within that time. And you're downstate, right?
Right.
Okay, so you're downstate. And you put in the notes that at one point you had only taken 18 days off in a year. Does this mean, like, total?
Total, like, out of 365 days. It was one launch that was a little bit more difficult than other launches, and I'd been involved in launches previously and since that one. But this launch was a little bit more extreme. It was a bigger change to the program and a lot more technology being introduced into the vehicle, a lot change in the vehicle architecture. So a lot of the unknowns going in. It was almost like the Rumsfeld story of you don't know what you don't know. And of course, you had to go through and discern those things and have problems solved on the way out. And that's one of the things I always say about being an engineer. You didn't necessarily invent things as an engineer, but you took known technologies and you would put them together in a different way to create new solutions.
So I have to ask, because the Potage side has a lot of engineers, okay? Like a lot. And they had some quirks that transferred from their work at GM to coming home. Is there any that come to mind that your family tolerated or later in life appreciated or maybe hassled you about?
One would be, as an engineer, you're always inquisitive. So when my wife would start talking to me about something, I'd start asking questions. And to her, questions were arguments. They weren't questions.
Okay.
So I would always have to defend and say, I'm just asking a question, not trying to create an argument. And so I had to try to tamp that down when I came home.
She felt like you were interrogating her, possibly?
No, I don't imagine that could ever be the case.
Yes, well, you know, I'm surrounded by engineers, so I understand the questions a lot. Another thing you said, and I thought this was interesting, we don't start work till 8:30, and I'm not a morning person, and you said your first meeting started at 5:45 a.m.?
It would, because the shift in the work started at 6 a.m., so you had to make sure that you had everything together from the previous night and set the direction for that day. And then at the end of the day, which was usually a 12-shift operation where I was at for the Corvettes anyway, some operations ran two shifts for launches to put the plants back together to produce a new vehicle. We would have a meeting at the end of the day. So, and then you had to make a report, of course, back to Detroit on how you did that day, what your issues were, what your solutions were, and get ready for the next day. So you'd get home and maybe eat dinner and get to bed for a few hours and be back at it. And God help me, like I said, you know, those were some of the longest days and longest periods and most trying periods in my career, but God help me, I loved it.
Loved every minute of it.
Yep.
Yeah. If my Uncle Bert used to say, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life.
That's truth. Where you'd be worn out at the end of the day, but you couldn't wait to get back the next day.
That's really fun. So you did that for 40 years. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, I want to talk about your transition into retirement and what that was like.
Sure.
Well, Welcome back, and you are listening to New Retirement Radio. This is Shay Pataja. I have my friend Paul Michalak in the studio with me today. He worked for 40 years at GM as an engineer, and for 14 of those years, he worked as on the Corvette team. I don't know, teams, it sounds like there was multiple. So I love Paul because he's so sharp, he has great insight, and he has no problem giving me critiques on New Retirement Radio.
Be careful what you ask for.
It's true. And I always appreciate the feedback. So, Paul, when did you start planning for retirement?
Well, I probably started before I even realized it. Early in my career, or at least in my work in life, there was no such things as 401ks. We had the opportunity within GM to purchase GM stock on a payroll plan at a reduced rate that you had to have vested for at least 5 years before you actually received it. So that to me was an opportunity to at least initially think about increasing my income, I suppose, as time went on. But as it turned out, that progressed when 401ks came into effect, and having a pension that pretty much what you thought was a guaranteed pension with GM, a lot of people didn't give that much thought. But I thought, well, you know, if I have some extra dollars, maybe that's the thing to do.
To save in the 401k?
To save when the 401k started. Mm-hmm. And they were, the 401ks at GM were, I don't want to say lucrative is not the right word, but beneficial to participate in. And of course, it was always a choice. But it was a good choice that I made then. Particularly since one of the surprises in my retirement is not long after retirement, they decided that pensions for salary personnel, anyway, were no longer going to be in existence. You're going to have a choice of going with an annuity or taking a buyout. So one of those, as the book would say, who moved my cheese type of things at the time, put you into a situation where you had to make a one-time, lifelong decision on which way to go with this.
That's not the goodbye gift you're looking for at the end of a long career.
No, no. And that included, of course, also an end to, even though previously you had lifelong medical benefits, vision benefits, dental benefits, those also went by the wayside during that time frame when all the automakers were having issues. And that was one of their ways to help them stay in the business, is to divest themselves of their legacy costs.
Have you always managed your money, or did you always, like, do you love managing money? We have clients who just, like, they love to do it. They'll always be consulting clients. They'll never be clients because they're such independent thinkers, and they just love doing that on their own. Or did you finally get to a point where you're like, man, maybe I need some help?
I suppose from the 401k standpoint, you always managed it on your own while you were working.
Mm-hmm.
Once I made the decision relative to whether to take a buyout or an annuity, then I thought, I mean, as an engineer, you always seek out other perspectives and other solutions. So I always would seek out from those that knew more than I did, or at least studied it more than I did. And I don't necessarily trust economists, except for one, the guy who wrote the Freakonomics books.
Oh, yeah.
Steve Levitt.
Yeah, those are pretty fun.
There's
huh?
one economist I do would probably trust. it took a lot of, took multiple or several financial advisors that I. That I sought their advice on which way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at that point, I think I still made a good decision as to how to pursue that.
I think it is helpful that you were used to working in teams with other professionals, so you were able to see the skill set that different people could bring to a problem versus thinking that, you know, you could do it all by yourself. When you work in teams, you just rely on other people's expertise as part of your job. And so that's probably...
That's a good point. And you do enough research on your own to see if that advice makes sense to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
No matter what their background is, you are an individual. and the solutions are individualistic to you.
Totally relative, and at the end of the day, right, you're the one that signed the paper and agreed to whatever advice.
That's true.
You better know what you're agreeing to. Yeah. All right, so let's talk about some successes you've had in retirement.
Oh, okay. Well, to start with, retirement didn't start the day I left GM because my wife, who was from Northern Michigan, had bought a business in Northern Michigan, and I went into business with her, so to speak. And then if I ever thought I was the boss at home, I learned that since she owned the business, she was the boss. So consequently, I hadn't been bored since the day I retired, and we ran that business for a few years until she couldn't do it anymore. But then I was able to get another family member involved with the business too. So those were successes. That it's tough to, you learn it's tough to work a business within the family.
Can I ask what business it was?
We had a small transportation business.
Okay.
A trolley company business.
Oh, okay.
And one of the best things I always said about the business was being able to do events and weddings, because weddings are always happy events.
Yeah,
Always a good time doing weddings, regardless of the condition of the people you might have taken them home at the end of the day.
Hey, they had fun. They did. You were the fun trolley.
So then you was able to pursue some other interests that I, of course, put on hold in career. I'm not a political individual, so to speak. I'm somewhat apolitical, but I was talked into becoming a member of the city village council in Mackinac City, of which I'm up for re-election again this year. And I elected to continue to do that. It's interesting that from my engineering side, there's always a lot of problems. And the problems are different because they're more people-oriented than hardware-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned very quickly that dealing with in the government sphere is a lot different than dealing in the private sphere. And that's the private sphere. You can hold favorite positions, if you would, about certain directions you might want to take, and things have to occur very, very quickly. One of the things, given my impatient nature, at least at the time, you learn is that things work very, very slowly from a governmental standpoint.
Oh, really? I would have never known.
And that was frustrating to start with, and it taught me. I learned that the only way to get patience is to practice it, so don't ever pray for patience. So at this point, I've become a little bit more patient in my mature years.
So that's a surprise in retirement.
That
you
is
worked
a surprise.
More, you became more patient when you probably didn't think you had to be patient anymore.
Nope, that's true.
And what are some other surprises?
One of the surprises was, of course, with COVID. One of my daughters lived downstate. There was a lot of concern downstate about the spread of COVID. Schools had gone to online for the most part. So my grandson came north with to live with me during that time frame. And so for about 6 weeks, he lived with me. And we did the daily online sessions and sessions that were came across on the computer, and I learned a lot greater. Even though I have one daughter that was a teacher, I gained a lot more appreciation for elementary teachers at that
time
frame.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Yes, and then what the listeners can't see is that you've got a huge smile on your face, and obviously you love that time with him.
It was.
It's pretty special. When else are you going to have your grandson with you for 6 weeks?
Never, probably.
Never.
Never.
Yeah, and how old is he?
Now he is 6.
Oh, my goodness, yep. And that's such a fun age.
Oh, it is, except when you try to maintain their attention span for any duration.
So were you exhausted by the end of the 6 weeks?
I don't want to say I was ready for him to go home.
Right.
Not at all. But I was ready for us to pursue different.
Yeah, do something different.
That's right.
Do something different together other than school.
That's right.
Yeah. What are some other surprises?
One of the biggest surprises I had was the loss of my spouse after 4 years into retirement.
Mm.
And that was something everybody talks, particularly from a financial standpoint, it's one thing from an emotional standpoint, and it's entirely different. I mean, you don't even consider the financial aspects from there. And my wife was at an age that she never once collected a Social Security check. So everybody talks about how you delay Social Security, and I will be one to argue the other side of that equation. The other side of that is I felt that, well, maybe I saved too much money, so that there were things that we could have done and maybe should have done during our time together that didn't have the opportunity to do. So consequently, you can't save too much money, I guess. I guess you can always say you never have enough, but you can, there is a way that you can save too much money, I suppose. I mean, it's always available there now for if you want to create a legacy going forward, but it changes how you're going to use your money in the future going forward. Of course, the loss of pension I mentioned was a big surprise during shortly after retirement, several years into retirement. So those were the big surprises that came about relatively early in my retirement period.
And how long have you been retired now?
12 years.
Wow.
Next week.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. My goal, I always said my goal is to be retired at least as long as I worked. And if that's the case, then I got to go until I'm 98 to that, for that break-even point.
Awesome. Well, I hope so. I'm crossing my fingers over here. Yes. Oh, man. All right. Well, we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about retirement shortfalls and then some observations and advice that you have.
Sounds
because
good.
You've got a lot of great stuff here, Paul. Thank you.
Sounds
we'll be
great.
Right back. All right, welcome back. You are listening to New Retirement Radio. This is Shay Pataja. I have my friend Paul Michalak with me. He retired from GM after 40 years and worked specifically on the Corvette. So a lot of fun conversations we have here. And after retirement, he jumped right into another job working on his wife's business. And we're talking about retirement successes, failures, insights. What does real retirement look like? And some things you cannot prepare for. So what were some of the retirement shortfalls, Paul?
Well, let's start out with a Shea stat.
Oh.
Which I learned after retirement that there was a study done that said, on average, you can normally expect good health to last until you reach 68 and a half years of age. And I wish I had learned that before I reached 68 and a half years of age. And because I can say that I was probably within the normal distribution of 68 and a half years of age when I started to see some elements that caused me to not do some of the things I wanted to do anymore. When you're younger, you think, oh, I'm going to be able to do this until I'm 80. No problem. And I can see why the travel industry really sees a big influx of people up until their mid-70s, and then they tail off because you just can't do that travel, or you get to a point where you don't want to do the travel. The other side of that is that my wife and I did a fair amount of traveling, did a fair amount of cruises. We love cruises. Obviously, that's not an option today.
Right. Who would have thought?
But that's a target date that I know a lot of people say they want to travel when they retire. So when you do retire, take advantage of it as soon as you can.
Start having fun.
You bet, and start doing those travels as much as you can when you can.
That's good input, and I've heard that from more than one person that I've interviewed. So it's good to hear it again for those who are listening.
I said that retirement is a trade of money for time. You trade your income for all the time that's left to you. In your world, and you don't have that income anymore. So have the income available, plan for having that income so that the time you have, you don't have to just twiddle your thumbs because you can't afford to do anything.
Yeah.
I always thought that doing some research, listening to the radio, of course, listening to Dennis and you on the radio and Heidi on the radio, having multiple advisors. And this is something you don't think necessarily of advisors. A lot of people, given their tax structure, has CPAs for them. They have an attorney. And you learn that they have competing interests, not bad interests. All their interests are good. But the recommendations you receive from your financial advisor may not correlate to your CPA or mm-hmm. to your attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to step back and balance them, sometimes get those folks together. Sometimes it's a matter of being knowledgeable so that your attorney may not be knowledgeable of what Dennis can bring to the table or what your CPA knows
mm-hmm.
relative
mm-hmm.
to tax law. So you have to bring those together, and you have to pursue that advice from those different advisors.
Yeah, we have John Sluice on the air frequently, and him and Dennis really disagree about the Roth IRA. So that always makes me laugh because live they've had discussions how they totally disagree. So it is true. You're going to get different advice.
And what does that do to somebody like me when they look at that and mm-hmm. or hear both sides of that or research both sides of that and say, do you do more? Do you take the tax hit? Do you not take the tax hit? Where's the taxes going? And if we had those crystal balls, we'd know which way to go.
Exactly.
I learned that you probably don't spend more and you probably don't spend a lot less than you had pre-retirement. Your normal living expenses don't change. A message from my dad that I remember that said, expenses rise to meet income.
That's so true. Expenses, I'm writing that down right now.
But your financial philosophy, if you will, as you've grown up, we are a product of our environment. We are a product of our upbringing. My parents were of an age that they went through the recession, and even though they worked hard and they saved their money and had a comfortable retirement, you could always tell that they were really, it was hard for them to spend money on themselves especially. But you learn that your internal financial philosophy has been ingrained, and you're not going to usually change. You're not going to become, if you were a saver, you're not going to become a spendthrift
Mm-mm.
in retirement.
So true.
And vice versa. I mean, if you spend every dime you had throughout your life, that's probably the way you're going to be in retirement. So you have to, in effect, in some cases, make sure you don't take lump sums when you don't know how to handle lump sums.
That's an excellent point.
The other side is that, this is from my mom's side, is that you don't need as much money as you think. And that's probably true.
Tell me more.
Well, I didn't really believe her, you know, because I thought, okay, I'm going to spend more and more money in retirement. But by the time you achieve retirement, a lot of your expenses are no longer in existence. Kids are out of college. The house, if not paid for, probably is not as much of a percentage of your income as it used to be, at least when you were younger. So consequently, when you think you're going to have those expenses forever, you don't have a lot of those expenses forever. So you can trade off those expenses for things you want to spend that money on. So you really don't need as much money as you think you do. That's the way it's been for me, at least.
No, I like that, though, because developing those financial habits when you're young is building a philosophy and sticking with it. But it's true. Also, what your dad says is that expenses rise to meet your income. That's
really
like
true.
A scary truth. I'm feeling conviction over here. Okay, Paul? That's not why I had you on the show.
Validation, right?
Yeah. It's terrifying. On to the next point, please. Can we skip past that?
I think the only hard and fast rule in retirement is that there are no hard and fast rules. Although many articles that you might read or research you might do through the financial industry might promote this, retirement is still individualistic. So, of course, everybody, you always hear about the 4% rule. Everything is a guideline. You know, it puts the bumpers up there like you would in a kid's bowling alley where you have mm-hmm. the bumpers in the alley.
Mm-hmm.
So there are still decisions to be made in retirement. And obviously, in my case, it certainly was true when you had to make a choice of transferring your pension to an annuity or taking a lump sum buyout to decisions that made in periods like this during COVID, and decisions to be made when you achieve Medicare age. And there's always decisions still to be made. So there's always advice to be sought.
It never ends.
It never ends.
It literally never ends.
Never. No, you're correct.
You have to get really comfortable with making decisions, which is not actually my comfort level. And some people just seem to, that's no problem. It's how they operate. But that has been the hardest lesson for me as an adult, is just getting comfortable with decisions. And that if that they're wrong decisions, not to stay stuck, bummed out about it.
Not
like
to
just
dwell on
keep
them.
Move on to the next thing. But for crying out loud, make a decision. So that's an excellent point.
Identify if you can what you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
Search out the answers to those. Yeah, they're not always going to be clear and concise, but at least you'll make an insightful decision for you.
Well, and this is coming from an engineer, so people should listen up, because engineers like things to line up, right?
They do, sometimes to the point where, as an engineer, I don't want to say this from an engineering decision standpoint, but sometimes from a decision standpoint, you might get either data overload, or you might achieve a point where you never feel like you have enough information to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wait that long, then the decision's made for you. And you don't want that to happen.
Yes, the old, you can wait to buy a plane ticket. You just might end up with one back up against the toilets.
Right,
so
right.
You can wait as long as you want.
Or
but
the flight may be full and
or
you miss out
you
entirely.
Miss out entirely. So there you go.
Yep.
All right, so what other advice do you have for those who are looking at retirement or close to retirement? I'm going to say, we seem to see at the office, like in their 50s, people get a lot more serious about, it's coming up real quick. And as we all know, with age, time goes faster. So they're feeling that. What's your insight or advice?
Retirement's more than just the financial considerations of retirement. I mean, that's what allows you to do retirement the way you want to do it. It's everything else around retirement. That retirement is, where do you want to live? How do you want to live? Do you want to travel? Do you not want to travel? Do you have kids? Are those kids close by? Or are they far flung? So there's a lot more to retirement than just the financial aspects. So don't dwell just on the financial aspects, at least from my standpoint. There's so much out there that you always said you wanted to do, so don't hesitate in doing it now. Mm-hmm. Because you might lose your opportunity to do it.
Let's talk about one really fun opportunity you had this summer.
Oh.
So, yes.
Well, one of the things, I always was, of course, being car-oriented, always was professionally race-oriented, had been to the Indy 500, of course, if you're race-oriented. But I was always a NASCAR fan. And having had the opportunity to live in the South, being assigned to the Corvette, being built in Kentucky, got even more ingrained into the NASCAR mentality, if you will. Of course, there were engineers I worked with down there that were ingrained also and had the opportunity to go to some NASCAR races. And I always wanted to see or wonder what it would really be like to do that. And this fall, I had the chance to go to MIS, Michigan International Speedway, and drive an older NASCAR onto the track alone. And, of course, everything, including with a spotter. And it's just like being on the track. And the speed you went was to your own comfort level. And I can't wait to do it again.
How fast did you go?
My daughter kept lap times. And if you calculate the lap times and you in MIS, you could always just stay full speed through the curves. Of course, I was not comfortable enough in doing that. But on the straightaways, I was probably approaching 150 miles an hour. I had a chance to drive Corvettes at the Proving Grounds, not quite that fast, even though they would go that fast.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a thrill in of itself, and I can't wait to do that again. And you have a camera on board, so you can take a video of yourself doing that. And I can't say that they do a very good job in NASCAR in that what you see inside the car and going into down the track is exactly what I felt in a lot of cases at MIS. So it was a great experience for me at the age I was, just getting into and out of the car with doors that don't open was a success point.
I didn't think of that. Okay.
But this was through an experience called Rusty Wallace Racing Experience, and they did a great job.
That is really thrilling, and I kind of want to go do that myself. So what? Give me, like, adjectives, thoughts. What was going through your mind when you're going that fast?
Don't crash the car.
Don't crash.
To start. Anyway, to start with, there is a, if you do crash a car, there is a insurance deductible of $25,000. Now, you can buy that down, which I did.
Wow.
I may not next time. But you can buy it down, and I'm sure most people do. The interesting part, too, is that we had a pre-race educational class about driving,
mm-hmm.
and that was taught by somebody that was previously within NASCAR. And that in itself, in understanding the car and what the car can do and what you should or should not do in the car. In fact, he had the five nevers is what you left the class
What are
with.
They? Do you have them memorized?
No, I don't have
you
them
don't?
Memorized
Shoot,
anymore.
The five
the
nevers.
The five nevers when you're in a race car.
Oh, see, now I want to know what those are. For the next conversation, I'll get those for you.
I do have them at home yet.
You can email them to me.
I can.
All right. I'll share them because I'll sit in the studio the day this airs, I think. So I'll be able to share them with
okay.
the audience. But. Well, Paul, thank you so much. I really appreciate your insight. You always have great insight and thoughts to share, and you've brought a completely fresh and new perspective to the Real Retirement chats that we've been having. Especially, I liked your point about you can save too much. You can get too focused on and work and forget that part of this is just to enjoy life, and I think that's a really great reminder. And there's a lot of GM retirees that live up here. So I hope that they're listening and can relate to some of your stories here. And but thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure.
All right. Thanks for listening to New Retirement Radio. We'll be back next week.